All right, everyone, welcome back to the Crypto Rundown, where we talk about everything that's going on in the great world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. From the fundamentals in the news to the technicals on the charts, we spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to, and we bring it to you in all under an hour, completely for free. And welcome back. It is August 28th, 2025. We are bringing this month to a close, and I'll tell you what, the crypto market is bringing the fire today. Bitcoin up 1.5%, pushing to 113K. Ethereum up 1.5%, pushing back to 4,600. Solana, absolutely a trailblazer, pushing up to $215, up 5.5%. And there's a lot to talk about. So we're going to open up with the charts here. We're going to see what's happening with this recent rally to the price, or recent rally on the price side. But the fundamental news today is going to be out the door. There are so many different catalysts that we have to talk about. And I think everyone's going to find this probably one of the more interesting episodes that we've done in a couple of weeks. Not saying a lot, because we've had some really, really interesting episodes. But there's just a lot of alpha that I think that you're going to be able to pick up from this. So real quick before we begin here, let's just touch on a couple of these topics so that you all know what you're getting yourself into over the course of the next hour. It also gives everyone a moment to join in on the live chat. So if you've ever wanted to catch these live, head over to our YouTube channel. It's where we share all of our screen shares, charts, news articles, data points. We put it all on the screen over there. We have lots of other great free content that you can get plugged into at the Crypto 101 podcast on YouTube. So let's talk about these at a high level, TiVo. I mean, we have the M2 money supply coming back into question. I saw people tweeting about how there's 0 out of the 30 market cycle top indicators. And again, none of those have fired yet. We're saying we're 0 for 30 for topping indicators. Solana continues to be the narrative at the moment. ETH is right behind it. A little bit of a flip there because ETH has been at the top of everyone's list. Now we're starting to see Solana come back in. Institutional players are becoming increasingly more interested in it. And there's even some shots fired at Ethereum, Tom Lee. And it's not just them. I would say it's most altcoin holders. We're going to roll that clip, talk about it a little bit more. But the odds of Ethereum breaking out to new all-time highs on Polymarket are just astoundingly high. They are just really, really high. We want to show everyone the numbers there, talk about that. There's new ETFs coming out. There's new forms of adoption. The United States is getting in on the action. We have Hyperliquid just blowing off the top, shattering records on the back end, certainly shattering records on the front end when we're looking at just its overall price performance. And of course, we just had NVIDIA earnings and a special little surprise after that. So an action-packed episode. TiVo, I hope you've buckled the seatbelt. In fact, I hope we have like one of those rocket ship seatbelts on where it like crosses over both sides of you, locks you into place, because it's going to be an electric episode.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Super happy to be here with you. Super happy to be on the rundown and super duper happy that I know it's not crypto related, but football is back. It's a huge weekend.
I'm ready, man.
College football's back. NFL football will be back next Saturday. I mean, we're talking about just absolute nonstop action as we eye up October and go into the fall. We've got football, we've got gambling, we've got crypto, we've got, you know, hopefully some new all-time highs in the future as we head into Q4. The excitement is literally next level for me. I was at you mentioned it pre-show with me. Where was I? You saw this cool sports bar. I was like, dude, yeah. It's this new spot, 1983 in Tampa. It literally got me so fired up. Everything from like the chicken tender tower to the French dip to the fries. We got 1,000 TVs across the space. There's a game room. Like, I couldn't tell you. I sat down last night for this thing, and I was just like, I'm so ready to spend 8 hours here and watch football nonstop. That's how excited I am.
I have one question. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love football. Can I also watch crypto in there? That's the real question. I saw you shooting deer. You're watching sports, eating good food. Can I have a chart up in there?
You know what? Maybe I could. I know the owner. He's a friend. He's a friend. He's an absolute visionary. I'll tell you that. This guy Chaz is an absolute visionary. I'm gonna ask him. Maybe like a Friday happy hour. If there's some all time highs, maybe we could get the rundown streamed into 1983. Oh. Just hey, never say never. Never say never with the crypto rundown. Never say never with TiVo. But like that spot, I was there last night. It was unbelievable. It got me fired up for some football. Fired up to come on the podcast today and get everybody going. The chat's starting to get active here. The viewers are piling in. We've got an awesome episode. Let's dive into it. Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation while they collect dust? And credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With Gemini Credit Card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight into your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, or you're a faithful listener of the Crypto 101 podcast and love Bitcoin and other cryptos, visit the Gemini credit card website so it's easy for you to earn even more Bitcoin or crypto with their credit card. Again, visit Gemini.com/card today to learn more.
I'm no tech genius, but I knew if I wanted my business to crush it, I needed a website now. Thankfully, Bluehost made it easy. I customized, optimized, and monetized everything exactly how I wanted with AI. In minutes, my site was up. I couldn't believe it. The search engine tools even helped me get more site visitors. Whatever your passion project is, you can set it up with Bluehost. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, what do you got to lose? Head to Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com to start now.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, let's dive into it, man. Let's just talk about these highs, because we've been in a little bit of, I don't know, this weird state. We've been up, then we're down, we're up, then we're down, and it feels a bit like a roller coaster. And I think most people were starting to get a little bit of whiplash from some of the price action. So if we just pull up the charts here and we take a quick look at what is happening, well, we can see that, you know, everything's starting to recover a little bit here on the screen. So Bitcoin, again, having some of this whiplash, it feels like a roller coaster. We went up and then down and then up and then down, and now we're going back up. And so all eyes are kind of back in this area specifically for Bitcoin, because what we have here is we're pushing up. You know, this used to be a high, turned into a low right here and right here. Now we're pushing back up into this area, and people are curious, you know, is this going to be a resistance zone again, since it used to be support? And so we're watching this pretty closely. So far, that does not look to be the case. Bitcoin's being pretty aggressive around 13K. It's a good sign. We have some of the key moving averages just a little bit higher towards 16 to 17K. It's going to be another pretty important zone to keep out or keep an eye out on. Beyond that, TiVo, I mean, the big level's 123, 124, basically the all-time highs. So, you know, I'm going to give everyone those three key levels to keep an eye out on, right as we kind of push towards the previous lows, the 20 and 50-day moving average around 16 to 17K, and then you have the all-time highs up here a little bit higher. So three little targets for the short to medium term. You know, if we do start to reject and we want to come a little bit farther down, at this point, you know, I would say it's probably the less likely scenario, but it's not something I'd completely rule out. You know, in previous months, I've been like hyper bullish, you know, kind of just a permabull approach. I'm easing off a little bit here. Again, I do think we resolve to the upside. I think the mid to long term is like we hit new all-time highs. In the short term, there's clearly a lot of choppy price action. And we always get this every August, every September. We get this choppy kind of bleeding effect to the downside. We get some nasty moves. It happens. It's just part of it. It's not the end of the world. I think we come out of this and we see a lot more upside afterwards. But I want to completely rule out this idea and say it's impossible for us to kind of test the lows, break 110 again. You know, it's certainly something that's still on the books. You know, and I say that because I'm not emptying out all of my dry powder here. I'm not going all in, getting max leveraged up on this stuff at the current prices, because there is just a little bit of risk that's still floating around out there. But with that kind of risk, you know, I love the DCA. You know, I love to add on the dips. And so that's really the way that I'm looking at playing this. Ethereum's kind of in a similar boat. it's actually holding value better than Bitcoin. We saw Bitcoin was breaking to lower highs, lower lows. Ethereum's still on a trend of higher highs, higher lows. So it's kind of outperforming Bitcoin as we've seen Bitcoin dominance drop. But we've seen Ethereum kind of super glued to this 20-day moving average ever since the breakout back here. We saw a breakout, bounce off the 20, breakout, brief break below it, but kind of bounce off this area, come back, bounce off this area, come back. And that's where we're glued to right now is that 20-day moving average. And we can see that Ethereum has this nice little trend line here of higher lows, higher lows, higher lows. And we want to see that theme continue. So as we have Ethereum right around this area, we want to see it hold the 20-day moving average, hold these higher lows, and build pressure into this flat level of resistance around 48 to 4900. And if we can do that, and if we can keep this theme up of like an ascending triangle-like move, I think that we really do push pressure into the ceiling, squeeze it up there, and we have the likelihood of Ethereum breaking out. Now, if we start to roll over, Ethereum does have support as it comes back to around 4K. We know that that's been a big support area, so it's not the end of the world if we do roll over a little bit, but Ethereum is looking hotter than Bitcoin. And one of the last altcoins that I want to talk about here is, or one of the last cryptos is Hyperliquid, because, or excuse me, not Hyperliquid, getting ahead of myself, Solana. Solana over here doing fantastic. And, you know, this is one for the Crypt Nation members. Shout out to all the Crypt Nation members. If you are one, you would know that we wrote about this in the Sunday, or excuse me, in the start of the week newsletter around Monday, Tuesday. And we talked about this ascending triangle that it had on the charts. And so far, you know, Solana's been outperforming both Bitcoin and Ethereum here this week. We've had this, again, nice little ascending triangle where we've seen higher lows into a flat level of resistance, pressure building towards the top end. And it looks like Solana's popping out. And the cool thing here is that there's some minor levels of resistance in between here and 261, but there's not a ton. I would say the next major resistance level is around $260. And so I think Solana's looking fantastic out, you know, right around here. It's breaking out to the highest level that we've seen since early February, and it's a new swing high. And so Solana here on the week so far, I think it was up 4.5% on Tuesday. It was up another 3.5% on Wednesday. And today it's up about 5.5% just over that. So Solana looking really strong, lots of attention there. We also have some positive catalysts that we need to talk about on both, you know, Solana, Hyperliquid, Chainlink, a couple of these others. We have Chainlink, again, trying to push up to the highs, trying to pull a Solana-like move. It's up around almost 9% on the day. And then you have Hyperliquid, which we're going to talk about earlier, hitting new all-time highs, pushing up towards the ceiling. And it looks an awful lot like the Solana chart. And this is, you know, all three of these are backed by some pretty big fundamental catalysts that we'll dive into as well. But I mean,
sorry to cut you off and throw you a curveball. I was thinking pull up NVIDIA. I know we put that at the back end of the show, but just throw up the chart and then we can break down, you know, kind of the conversation around NVIDIA reported earnings. Again, not a crypto, even crypto related stock, but NVIDIA is such a big part of the stock market as a whole, right? Like if you have a 401k, your biggest position in that 401k is probably NVIDIA by no choice your own. It's the market's decision, right? It's just that S&P 500 market, you know, standard allocation. So this stock, when it has earnings, is a main event for the entire market as a whole. I saw that they beat. It was a full beat. It was a good guide. And as you can see there on the chart, not really doing much, but kind of just an interesting topic, which is why we put it on the sheet, is like, okay, you can make the theory that Bitcoin has been leading the stock market by like a month. That's kind of a narrative that's been trending, right? And so Bitcoin broke out to the upside, we hit our new highs, and then the stock market, the Dow, the S&P, the Nasdaq, the Dow, everything followed 3 to 4 weeks later. So now as Bitcoin's kind of cooled off a little bit, and then this cooling pattern that you just saw, Brendan, on the charts kind of showed you like, hey, we're bouncing in this range. Again, we don't have the crystal ball. We have our tools. We have our research to try to help, you know, you guys on the rundown, and especially inside the community with our newsletters where you get the first word. But we're kind of in this space. We're like, okay, what's the next catalyst for a leg up? What's the next catalyst for a leg down? Is Bitcoin going to show the hand of the stock market? Nvidia could definitely show the hand for kind of the major moving averages. So what are your thoughts on the Nvidia earnings? What did you see, Brendan? And what are you thinking?
Yeah, you know, it was a big deal because they're the largest company in the world, $4.5 trillion in terms of market cap, which is just insane. So we're talking several times something like even Bitcoin, and bigger than the entire crypto market combined. And it was a big deal, right? People look at them as kind of the leader in tech. They are the essentially like the infrastructure play for AI to happen, for all these other key components of the market to even be possible. And I looked at their earnings and they essentially beat on everything, right? I think they've beaten like 20 something out of the last, or they've only missed like two out of the last like 20 something earnings or something like that. And they continue to grow at this fantastic rate. I think that their year-over-year growth was at like 50% or something, which is crazy in recent years. The only two downsides that I saw here that I think made people a little bit nervous were the data center revenue and the FUD and uncertainty in the air around whether they're going to be able to sell to China. And I think that had people a little bit spooked. And the data center like wasn't even bad. I think it was just the fact that it's been such the talk of the town. Everyone was looking at it. And they came in at 41.1 billion. Their expectation was 41.2. So they missed by 0.1 there and people freaked out. And again, I think that that's just completely blown out of proportion because it was just so hyped up. I don't really see an issue there. Then there's the China stuff, which already looks like it's coming to a resolution. So I don't know. I think just valuations were high. And so people wanted a reason to have to sell it off. And the reason that we talk about this is because, again, NVIDIA supports a lot of crypto mining. They support a lot of just like infrastructure in general. They're kind of the leader of the tech space over on the TradFi side. And there's a little bit of a correlation between the two when you look at like risk on tech assets or risk on tech equities and risk on, you know, cryptos, which is pretty much every crypto. There's a little bit of correlation there, but again, I looked at it and the report, I think, was minus the China uncertainty or the China FUD and the data center revenue, which was like basically on par. it was really a good report. So I think people just wanted a reason to be bearish at the top.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, honestly. I think it's just one of those things and it makes sense. It kind of pairs along with the Bitcoin pricing where we're just kind of chugging along here. And there's always, you know, the possibility for some wild catalyst to the upside. I think for NVIDIA, there's a lot of thought and debate around kind of China. And are we allowed to ship the top chips? I believe they're called the Blackwell chips. Can we ship those to China? Is it a national security issue not to? Jensen Huang makes the argument that we should be shipping them the best technology because then they have to work on the American stack. So plenty to debate to go around there. But yeah, crypto-wise, I think it is all correlated, and that's what we try to do here on The Rundown. We bring you a little bit of everything. We've got, before we go on to our other topics here, we got some people in the chat. One Vision, Ryan, Ryan's our number one commenter in the whole YouTube. Ed from Central Florida is here. Good morning to everybody. Everybody else in the chat, please tell us where you're from. Let us know what you guys want to learn. We could do some questions at the end. Also, if you're not subscribed, bottom right, click our logo, subscribe. Like the video if you haven't. We really appreciate it. And again, if you enjoyed that technical analysis section with Brendan, check the links below. He has an awesome course where you can learn more. I put the link for you there. Or like we said, we called the Solana breakout in the newsletter earlier this week. If you want that type of first word action, there's a $1 trial down there as well. But Brendan, the thought of where Bitcoin is going next, right? We can make the case for the upside where we are truly perma bulls on Bitcoin. But at least we recognize that. You can make the case for the downside as well. But are we still believers in the M2 money supply? That is the number one question. You know, I love to bring this chart up when I see it, when I see some price movement and then I see the M2 money supply move up or down. I'm always just like, let's grab this chart. Let's bring it back. Is this, this would be the biggest case for staying steady and a move to the upside because we haven't seen this discorrelation from this chart in a while. the M2 money supply is, you know, even with Bitcoin making its, you know, newer all-time high not that long ago, the M2 money supply keeps rising. So, you know, your thoughts, do we still believe in this? And obviously this is something we like to track on the show. Chat, toss it in the comments. What do you think as well? But Brendan, let's toss it to you first.
Yeah, I think so. The thing about the M2 money supply is the more that you zoom in, the more unreliable it is. And the more you zoom out, the more reliable it is. So over the long term, it tends to have a closer correlation as opposed to over the short term. We know that this can typically delay by several months. And even with that, you can see that there's a little bit of, we're kind of straying off the course just a little bit. But again, I think that when we look at the M2 money supply, I think it's like a loose tool to use. Is it going to be my single point investment thesis? No, right? I need other factors. I need other catalysts to be at work to kind of feed me information. And I wouldn't use this as like a solo investment point, right? I wouldn't base my entire investment off of just the M2 money supply. I think it's a good thing to like look at and follow. And I do think that, again, it works, you know, generally speaking, over the long term. In the short term, we do see variations of it. We've seen it in the past. I think we'll see it at different points of the future. But again, the M2 money supply is more something where you look at this over like a long-term picture, and that's where you get the most effectiveness. So yeah, quick little reminder here for everyone is that this is not used for day trading. This is used for like macro moves at a very, very high level, and it should always be joined by other pieces of info. But yeah, I mean, I'd still say it's worth following. Certainly worth keeping a track of, and I'm a fan of it.
And of course, nothing that we talk about is personal financial advice. We're not personal financial advisors. You know, you got to do your own research. We're just here for educational purposes to talk about crypto and have some fun. But to your point of you got to use your other data points, right? There's a ton of other data points. That's what, you know, you're an expert on. Bryce is an expert on. Rohit, we had him on the program not so long ago. Talk about a data analyst and an expert. That guy is unbelievable. And that's kind of, again, what we do here is we get all of our information from all of our team that have a bunch of different data points and expert points. But when you talk about specific data points, Brendan, you brought up an awesome tweet here about, you know, hey, here's 30 data points that we like to track for market cycle tops, and we have seen zero of them. So walk us through the theory of these market cycle tops, and then I tried my best to zoom in here. Maybe we could do one more, two more there, and then you could try and maybe point out a couple of your favorite that are on this list for the top 30.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I want to clarify, these aren't necessarily indicators that I would call a topping indicator. Like there's some topping indicators that I believe in that aren't on this list. There's some ones that I might not believe in that are on this list. And so there's a little bit of leeway here, but this is saying, generally speaking, people like to look at these things as like general topping indicators. And zero of them have fired, right? There's been this argument online of like, is the crypto top going to be in the next month? Is this a place to be worried about? And this is saying that like, hey, none of these topping indicators that are, you know, pretty generally accepted are in, and none of them are firing yet. And if you scroll down just a little bit, you know, we can take a look at some of these here, TiVo. And there's also sorts of different ones, right? And so you can have like the Bitcoin rainbow chart. You have the ETF to BTC ratio. You have days of net outflows. You have the RSI, which I actually do like to use. You have the altcoin season index. You have Bitcoin dominance. You know, a lot of the things that we do look at on here. And then you can see like short-term and long-term holder supply and like all this stuff. And none of these are really firing. Now, some of them are getting kind of close, you know, but really nothing's over like 80% for the most part. You have a few things around 70%, which is to be expected, right? We've had a pretty big run so far. So I would expect things that are, you know, pushing around the 50, 60, 70%. I think that's normal. But even then, that's saying, hey, we still have another 30, 40% to go in terms of like time probably to the upside. And I would agree. You know, I think it's hard to look at the market right now. And again, from my perspective as an analyst, I just don't see the topping indicators there. I think the only one that you could try to argue is saying, well, we're approaching 16 months after the halving. That's a topping indicator. And we're not even there yet, but we are approaching it. So I think people could look at that. But other than that, if you're looking at like a technical perspective or any kind of data or anything like that, the topping indicators just aren't there yet, right? I don't see them. It doesn't look like it on the chart. It doesn't look like it on the RSI. It doesn't look at it on like different moving averages or indicators or a lot of, even like the fear and greed index and stuff. It just does not look like we have topped yet. And I think that this, like, again, gives people some good reassurance, helps paint the full picture. Altcoins aren't where people want them to be either. And I mean, adoption and stuff isn't slowing down. So,
yeah, actually, I wanted to bring up the fear and greed index. I thought I put it in the chart there. Maybe I accidentally deleted it. But now that you mentioned it, we got it right here. Let's pull it up. 45. So on the back end of neutral there, tipping towards fear, and extreme or yearly high was still in November. We didn't even get back up to that yearly high, which I find interesting as we were pulling those all-time highs and the altcoins started to move and that Bitcoin dominance dropped, and we still didn't reach our extreme greed, which I think is interesting. And we're kind of tipping at that neutral point, and I think the technical analysis showed that where, you know, we're kind of building that short-term range again. And yeah, I mean, if you break to the downside, you're going to get into the fear category, which I think is, if you told us again, let's go back a year, right, Brendan? Like if you said, hey, the Nakai trade, we've brought that up on the show many times before, but I think that was August, right? So basically a year ago when we dropped down to, I think it was 60, maybe in the high 50s during the Nakai trade. If you would have said, hey, a year from now, you're going to be at neutral, tipping into fear, and Bitcoin's going to be $115,000, $110,000. Like, I think every single one of us on the team and every single one of us in the industry and on watching on the live and the podcast would be super stoked if we were told that a year ago. So I think it's pretty cool when Bitcoin can be above 100K and we can hit a fear zone. I think that's a testament to how far we've come.
Yeah, I think I would have been laughing. If you would have said, hey, Bitcoin's going to be around fear zone at 110K, I would have been like, you're crazy. What kind of story would need to happen for that to go right? But yeah, you know, everything is, again, fairly strong. We have these ups and downs and stuff. But like the big narrative right now, TiVo, is I would say less so Bitcoin. Bitcoin dominance has been dropping. The big narratives have been around Ethereum and Solana and a few altcoins as well, but the Solana narrative is just building again, which is crazy.
And credit to us. I think it's something, I don't want to pump my own tires too much, but I believe it's something that I brought up a couple times over the last couple weeks where I've been all in on the ETH trade. Me and you both, we've talked about it for, you know, at this point, 6 to 8 weeks. We've talked, and we have a Tom Lee hater, if you will, coming up on the show. We have that clip, but we've pumped ETH, we pumped Bitmine and Tom Lee, and we showed you step by step. I think we're even a little early on the show if you watch every week, which is why I promote that, of kind of showing you this Ethereum narrative is building, it's going, and it's going to be a snowball going downhill, right? It's just picking momentum, and it's growing. And then I think towards the top back end, again, not that I sold out of everything, I'm still an ETH believer, but I kind of started saying on the show, hey, when these narratives happen, you know, we got to remember, like, January, there was the Solana, the meme coin narrative, and then Solana hit its all-time highs and was rocketing in January as ETH was pronounced dead. So now that nobody's talking about Solana and Ethereum is the bell of the ball, like, that narrative is basically what I was saying is odds are what's old is new again at some point, and that narrative will flip. And again, not that ETH's going to go back to being in the graveyard by any means, but Solana is probably going to pick up speed more than ETH at some point, depending on when that changes, when the money flow goes in. Once the money flow goes, then all the big names that are putting the money flow in are going to come out and saying, hey, we're buying Solana for these reasons. And now we're seeing that with Pantera Capital plans to raise up to $1.25 billion. to convert a public company into the Solana investment firm. This crypto fund will acquire a NASDAQ listed company, Solana Co., and it will accumulate SOL. So it's basically the same play of Bitmine, right? You're just taking this NASDAQ or, you know, a stock that's listed on the stock market. You're acquiring it as a vehicle in the stock market, and you're just converting it into a Solana treasury company. And then there was another one. what do we have here with Galaxy? So this comes out, and then a couple, like literally a day later, is like, okay, now the floodgates are open. They must have gotten their position built. And then, you know, Galaxy is partnering with Cantor Fitzgerald, is acting as the lead banker for another Soul, you know, another Soul strategy, if you will. And speaking of Soul strategy, we've had them on the podcast before. Yeah. So again, obviously Bitcoin, the easiest number one narrative to buy into across the board. And then, you know, Ethereum and Solana seem to be jockeying for that number two position. And I think it'll just continue kind of to teeter like that, which is kind of interesting. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we said, hey, there's this balance meme back and forth between ETH's hot, SOL's hot, ETH's hot, SOL's hot. And we talked about the beginning of the year and now the second half of the year, and we said it's going to go back and forth. And here we are, right? You know, so the narrative switch, one's hot, then the other one is, and it's going to continue to happen here. So, you know, we can be bullish on Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana and other cryptos. It's not this one winner takes all. We're not maxis over here. But I think it is interesting that we are starting to see these treasury companies expand. And you have some pretty reputable sources here with Pantera and Galaxy being like gigantic TradFi names and or just gigantic players in general. And they're coming out here and saying we're choosing Solana for our DATs, right? The treasury companies. And yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think originally, you know, it makes sense with Bitcoin. And then I think it also makes sense with Ethereum, with some of the stablecoin plays. With Solana, again, I love Solana. I have a ton of Solana. I think it starts making a little bit less sense with Solana. And then I think once we go past Solana, I think the treasury companies, dare I say, I don't think they make a lot of sense for some of these other altcoins outside of those. I think you can understand, hey, Solana's big infrastructure, Ethereum's massive infrastructure, Bitcoin's the godfather, it's completely decentralized, that makes sense. But I've started to see, and we've talked about it, treasuries with some of these other altcoins, and it's cool and stuff. I just don't know if it necessarily makes logical sense to me. To each their own. I know people have, they're convinced on their favorite altcoin. But yeah, you know, I would be a little bit concerned moving forward. And here's my fear with these treasury companies is that we're starting to get a lot more of them. They're going to be competing with each other. And the way that I see this playing out is they're going to need to cater to the masses. They're going to say, hey, don't choose them, choose us. And how do they do that? How do they outperform all these other competitors if the space is becoming more, more concentrated? I think the way that they do that is they start being more risky. They're going to say, well, we can generate more and we're better because we're generating more, and they're going to take more and more risks. And my fear here is that eventually that leads to someone blowing up, is that eventually people try to outperform, they try to offer things that aren't as realistic, and it becomes unsustainable. And then all it takes is one or two of those to be stupid, get over leveraged, not be able to hold out through a bull market or through a bear market, and then they blow themselves up. And that's like my only fear with some of these treasury companies, or DATs as they're being called now, is that I think that that's kind of the way that we're pushing ourselves towards. And we saw this happen before with exchanges. We've seen it happen with stable coins and different DeFi players, in that, you know, the big one that comes to my mind is like some of the previous stablecoin stuff that we saw. And then that became unsustainable. And then they were offering these yields of like, oh, you could earn 3%, then 5%, then 10%, then 20%+ on your stablecoin returns. And then that became unsustainable. And a lot of those providers that were promising that, they blew up. And it kind of led us into some dark periods afterwards. And I don't want to see that happen with the DATs. So my only hope here is that, hey, we don't get levered up. We play it a little bit smart. I know the space is going to get more concentrated, but I don't want to see them doing stupid things to kind of shine out. And that's like the number one thing that I'm keeping my eye out on these. And so far, it doesn't look like we're seeing that. Again, my fear here is that like you have really reputable names with Michael Saylor and Tom Lee and Galaxy and all these others. Those aren't necessarily the ones that I'm as worried about. It's the ones that come afterwards and they try to steal market share and they try to make a name for themselves. I think that's where there's going to be a little bit more risk.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. all that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, again, I think the narrative, once it starts, everybody's all in. And like you said, it just kind of popcorns from there and grows and grows and grows. And finally, I see a take against it. I mean, especially from a big name. So Jack Mahler's a friend of the program, of course, and we've played a lot of clips over the years of him talking about Bitcoin. But this is the first time I think kind of people saw like an anti-hot take, which, you know, Jack's not afraid to give a hot take for sure. So let's tune in and see, again, without saying Tom Lee is kind of directing it at this, you know, Ethereum, treasury strategy.
What's funny about the narrative that these Ethereum treasury companies have created is my co-founders are the inventor of stablecoins, and we've created a Bitcoin treasury company. So I would wage to say that the inventor and the largest stablecoin in the world probably has the market expertise that everyone else lacks. And they don't even think an Ethereum treasury company is a good idea. So I think it's a highly questionable narrative. What's fun?
Highly questionable narrative there, Brendan. I think, again, you gotta take all the information in. That's what this show's about. Just to, again, see everything that's going on and break it down. And so you can question the narrative, but the only problem is, at least for now, I guess you can question the actual validity of how it will work out in the end game. I think that's what Jack's doing. But our friend of the program, James Safar, posted this the other day where the top holders of Ethereum advisors are dominating the known holders, and they're pulling away from hedge funds. But just like, again, just all the big money in this is insane right now, and it's all happened fairly recently with this run-up. I mean, you see the investment advisors are basically, it's close to a double there. So investment advisors, hedge funds, brokerage, private equity, and then you can see kind of goes down there on the list as the exposure number drops. But, you know, sometimes the narrative is louder than the fundamentals of maybe even the actual underlying technology is kind of the theory that Jack Mahler's is pitching. But then again, you can make the case that the Tom Lee's of the world and going on TV and all these podcast clips that we've played is like you pump your own bags, right? Everybody's always on TV, always pumping their own bags. We try to be a little bit more educational in manner and obviously identify our biases, but Jack Mahler's is his whole life in Bitcoin and has his own company and, you know, that he's partnered with people and launched and all that stuff. And it's all based around Bitcoin. So you got to remember, he might have a good point, but he's also, again, quote unquote, pumping his own bags. But what's your thought around the hot take there? You might be on mute, Brendan. I can't hear you. Either
yeah,
that
I am.
Or
sorry. you know, again, I understand this idea of a Bitcoin treasury company. I think, again, that one makes the most sense. It's completely decentralized. It's like, we don't know who Satoshi is. We don't know who the creators are. It's the most decentralized of the bunch. It's the godfather of crypto. As I said, I think it makes the most sense for a Bitcoin treasury. However, I think people are looking at the infrastructure plays and they're saying, what could Ethereum be the infrastructure of moving forward? How big can stablecoins get? How big can tokenization get? How big can the infrastructure on Ethereum and those different sectors that we just talked about, DeFi included, how big can those get? And if you truly do believe that stablecoins are going to be an integral part of society and companies, and same thing with tokenization and DeFi and stuff, then I think it makes sense to have an Ethereum treasury based off of those. Now, if you're looking at it from just outside of that, you don't believe in those narratives, and you just think that at a high level, I think Bitcoin does make more sense in terms of a treasury outside of those. But again, if you believe in tokenization, if you believe in stablecoins, if you believe in DeFi, and that those spaces are going to grow, we've seen a lot of banks, we've seen a lot of different financial groups, we've even seen the government come out and say that this can be a multi-trillion dollar market. If you believe that, which is good evidence as to why, then I think an Ethereum treasury makes sense, but for different reasons than the Bitcoin one, right? And so I think it all depends on your investment thesis. And that's what it comes down to here. It looks like Jack Mahler is looking at this investment thesis through the lens of like, what is Bitcoin at a fundamental level and what is its role and how decentralized is it? And he's looking at it through that lens and saying, Ethereum doesn't hold the same like macro approach. And he's right, it doesn't. But if you're looking at it through this investment thesis saying, what could the ripple effects of Ethereum be through DeFi and stablecoins and tokenization and these other things, what could that be in the next 10, 15 years? Then I think it makes more sense on that because Bitcoin doesn't have as much fundamental use case as Ethereum does. But Ethereum doesn't have as much of a like decentralized, I would say like as much of a reserve asset and something that is as untamperable as Bitcoin. So they're good for different reasons. And I think that's fine, right? There's a reason why people like Ethereum for one reason. They like Bitcoin for a different reason. And they're saying that they can be reserve assets or that they can be treasury assets for two completely different reasons. So that's my take on it, is that, like, again, I think that these make sense. If he has that belief, by all means. You know, again, I like both. I have them both. I have a lot of both. So
yeah, I think me and you both have a lot of both. But the show goes on in the sense that, again, SharpLink, I'll share this, SharpLink keeps buying. They bought another 56,000 ETH there, around 252 million. Obviously, you know, BitMine and Tom Lee have gotten to the point where they seem kind of sailor-esque in a once a week. Recently, we'll see if that pace can keep up. There was some wild stat. I wish I had a chart for it. But anyway, I'll try and find it maybe for the next show. There was some stat where it was BitMine was a top 10 traded stock in volume, which is insane considering, you know, if you go back again before this announcement of the ETH treasury, it was not even close to sniffing any top 100, 200 list. Getting that trading and options premium and just the volatility around it going pretty quickly, like MicroStrategy does as well. So that's, again, just something to keep an eye on. The narrative's in full swing. And, you know, when it comes to the betting markets, and this is a great point of you pulling this up, of the odds of with the odds Ethereum hits 6K this year. This is interesting. Just topic in general. I'm going to hand it off to you in a second for your thought around this specific one, but also just touch on how you think Polymarket, Kalshi, these betting markets are coming into crypto in kind of a quick way, where it's really becoming a part of the culture. It's really becoming part of possibly even the strategy. I know there's a lot more people smarter than me that are talking about, you know, how can you get some alpha here? How can you hedge? You know, all that type of stuff using these betting markets, because a lot of time when things are announced, the price jumps in the markets before you could even open up your brokerage, especially in TradFi. But, you know, Brian McNutt and I were talking about this over lunch the other day. It was the betting markets, you can kind of maybe get some alpha with a little bit more of a time window if you're early to the news. So thoughts on betting markets overall, but first thoughts on this Ethereum wager of, you know, 6K this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's an 80% chance or 80% odds that we hit 6K, or sorry, we hit 5K by the end of this year, 50% chance that we hit 6K by the end of the year. And you can see all the rest of the numbers on the screen as well. The thing about these betting markets is that they're usually the most accurate source of like what is likely to happen, because these are peer-to-peer and they're not operated with like a casino at the back end or the house on the other end. You're betting against other people, which makes the odds the most reliable because it's all peer-to-peer betting. So you're, again, it's just you versus other people and that's it. And so it tends to be the least manipulated and the most reliable. And we saw that happen, especially with like the election and with rate cuts and with like a lot of other key decisions. And what this is saying is that there's like almost a certainty. To have 80% on Polymarket is high for odds. And so to say 80% is saying that we're going to hit new all-time highs by the end of this year on Ethereum, it's saying it's extremely likely. So again, we stand by that. We say, hey, new all-time highs are possible here for Ethereum. And it's even like borderline likely that we're going to go to 6K, which is well above that. And so when we're looking at this price prediction of like what's possible this year, again, like new all-time highs are like the likely scenario. We're saying that, but we're also saying, look at the betting market information. If you don't believe it, you can get insane odds. You can go in at the 20-cent margin and low it up and you're going to get paid big time, right? But the odds are right now that Bitcoin hits new all-time highs by the end of this year. And it's good to see more information kind of pointing in that direction.
Yeah, I think it's a tool in the toolbox for both research and maybe some alpha. And again, I'm not somebody that can do the math on this, but there's probably some arbitrage opportunities. Just as kind of on the back half here, as we change topics and continue on, just shout out to the chat. Pretty active today, Brendan. We got Mrs. C. Lee, Mick Chris, first time here. We had another person, Shumay, I might be pronouncing that wrong. My apologies, but welcome. And then Tammy from Texas. Love that. And yeah, just good vibes in the chat today. If everybody could just give a like, it really helps us grow the show. Hit the like button, subscribe, and we do this multiple times a week. But continuing on, salute to the Link Marines, Brendan. Actually, a lot of news around them. The first one is Bitwise is filed for an ETF. So that's exciting. We always kind of track all the new ETFs that are coming through. I'm sure Bitwise won't be the only one. And I say that specifically because some news literally out of right before we hit live, I threw this on here, was a salute to the Link Marines for serving our great nation. So announcement here that the U.S. Department of Commerce partners with Chainlink to bring government macroeconomic data on chain. Now, I saw something earlier in the week, yesterday maybe, or 2 days ago, that it was announced that the government wanted to bring a lot of its data on chain, that the reporting data, like we talk about the CPI reports, PPI reports, all that stuff. We've had great debates on how accurate they are, but I think a first step would be, interestingly enough, to report them on chain, and then you kind of work backwards from that. In a sense, right? So first we'll report them on chain, and then can we work backwards where we just start feeding the data on chain to be able to get real time updates and make sure that, you know, none of this, I don't know the guesswork that goes into that or the surveying that goes into that, but those numbers have been consistently wrong, especially the jobs data for a while with those corrections. So I think this is a step in the right direction. It's exciting. Obviously great for Chainlink. You're getting ETF filings, and then you're getting all this, buzz around reporting the data. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, Chainlink, we saw it on the chart earlier, and that thing had been just tearing, pushing up to a massive resistance. It's also, if you zoom out on it, it's interesting. I don't want to go too deep onto this, but there's a giant pennant when you zoom out to like a weekly chart, lower highs and higher lows, and it's squeezing and it's been seeing a lot of attention, but this is also good stuff. Chainlink, for people who don't know, they're the largest oracle in all of crypto. They're native to Ethereum, but they've been branching out since then. And they are a core part of the crypto ecosystem because of that. And they have the vast majority of Oracle market share. They are so dominant that the second place is like miles and miles behind them. And so they're getting, I think what they're seeing is kind of getting some of the recognition that they deserve here for being such a dominant, reliable Oracle player. They're not always going to be the most flashy. They're not always going to be like the most entertaining, but they're a core part of infrastructure in crypto as we know it. And it's cool to see them getting these kind of deals and getting the love as well. So like, again, you know, I'm bullish on Chainlink. I own some myself, so I want to disclose that. But yeah, no, they're doing some good things, and I think it makes sense as to why they're getting some love and attention here.
Yeah, there's a lot of attention just going around the crypto market still, even when the price action is, you know, maybe in some eyes, you know, stalling out on Bitcoin. There's always stuff going on under the hood. This stat, just wow, this is me running the Twitter here, just wow. I mean, Hyperliquid recorded $330 billion in trading volume in July, and beating out Robinhood, which they didn't compare, and I'm sure it was pretty close there. But man, people are hopping onto Hyperliquid. I know that's something that the team has written about in newsletters. The team has talked about on the coaching calls. So I just got to hand that one off to you, Brendan. I know you've been deep in the research of Hyperliquid.
Yeah, this is crazy because what we're now seeing is, I mean, you have it on the screen. They hit a record $330 billion in trading volume in July last month, and that beats what Robinhood was doing. And we know Robinhood, we talk about it all the time on here, is like one of like the leading up-and-coming, I don't even know if we can call it up-and-coming anymore, but one of the leading brokerages, especially in the States. And this is huge because Hyperliquid is crypto native. And we talked about the HYPE token hitting new all-time highs. It's a big deal because Robinhood is almost $100 billion market cap. And Hyperliquid, last time I checked, was around a $16 billion market cap. Now, obviously, there's other things that go into the market cap, right? How much revenue are they making? How much profit are they actually taking away from that revenue? What's their total users and stuff? There's a lot that goes into that. So I'm not saying because they're doing this, they should be valued as much as Robinhood. But it's certainly interesting to say, like, hey, like, people have been trying to argue that maybe Hyperliquid is overvalued. And it's like, well, maybe it's not. If they're pulling these kind of numbers, again, we need to see what some of those other metrics look like. But maybe they're not. And I think that there's two things that we can look at. Number one, saying kind of comparing them to Robinhood and saying, hey, if Robinhood hit around $100 billion valuation in terms of market cap, Hyperliquid could probably get a fraction of the way there as well, given these numbers and maybe some other statistics. Number two, I think the other thing that we can look at here is the fact that Hyperliquid is not available in the United States yet, which is arguably the biggest market for someone to get access to. So if they've gone this far and they don't have access to the United States, what if we see regulations ease up and they get access to it? Well, that could do wonders to their market cap because they're unlocking the most significant, largest audience for their product and service. So I think there's a couple different ways to look at this. And I'm saying all this, I have no exposure to Hyperliquid, but I'm a big fan of what they've been doing. And I think that there are positive catalysts that you can still look at to potentially argue that this thing can go a whole lot further than it's already at. And also, I think they have 75% of the derivatives market share in crypto. So like 3/4 of market share in the derivatives space is all soaked up by Hyperliquid. So again, very, very dominant there. So yeah, I mean, another one worth watching.
Yeah, 100%. And I know the team's watching it very closely. You guys have been talking about that for a while, the whole team, the newsletters, the coaching calls. So shout out to you guys for being on top of that one as it continues to grow. Something that I saw that I wanted to bring up, basically the topic is like banks have still, lost the narrative, right? They're losing the narrative of the people, not that they even ever had it. It just reminds me of my... my meme here of Jamie Dimon just absolutely getting leaped by Bitcoin here, and just these banks, they're still trying to fight it underneath the surface. Obviously, there's all this bullish news that comes out. These, J.P. Morgan's doing a blockchain here, and Citigroup's doing this, and Wells Fargo's doing that. But Matt Hogan just really elevating the thought process here for this political report, where banks are basically trying to stop the yield from crypto companies. So we'll scroll down here first. These big banks and the reports of groups like American Bankers Associations, so the ABA, as I'm sure all of you know it as, the ABA, they're lobbying. They're trying to get, they want to block all crypto companies from paying yields to customers who hold stable coins. So like right now, I know that on Coinbase, if you hold their USDC product, I think you're getting like a 4.2 or maybe a 4.5 yield percentage if you're holding those stable coins. And that, like, these banks are definitely probably starting to see outflows of holding money in those accounts, and that's with good reason, because if you have any financial literacy at all and you hold a couple Chase Bank accounts, as Matt Hogan, friend of the program, pointed out, Chase Total Checking, none. Chase Premier Plus Checking, 0.01. Chase Sapphire Checking, 0.01. Chase Secure Checking, none. I mean, that's the standard API for these accounts. And again, if you want to, you know, you want to keep your emergency fund, a lot of people need an emergency run, right? Like the general topic is, the general amount is 3 to 6 months of bills. Like, God forbid, if you lost your job or you got hurt or sick and couldn't work, you need at least, you know, 3 to 6 months of your bills. And those people need to put that somewhere where they can access it. So you can't lock it up in a 5-year T-bill, right? You're leaving it in your checking and your savings account. And these accounts are doing nothing for them. They're doing nothing. I mean, you could just go open your Coinbase account and you know, throw it in some USDC and clip a 4.5%. It's a no-brainer. But these banks are lobbying to try and stop it instead of just unlocking and giving back to the customers. I mean, man, I, you know, me and you could rant on this all day, Brendan, but it's just frustrating.
Yeah, it is, man. And like, I've come to this realization and I've gone back and forth with my bank in recent years, and just the returns or whatever they offer me, whether it's like a checking, a savings, a money market, everything, it's all so unappealing. Like when they're telling me I can get 2% on my savings account, which I know is a little bit on the lower end, it doesn't even beat inflation. Like, why would I want to keep my money in there if I know I'm losing to inflation every single year? I get a good one. Maybe I'm keeping up with inflation at that point and it's doing nothing. But again, still, like, do I really want the vast majority of my wealth gaining 0%, 2%, 3%? Like, I don't know. I think they have a place in society. I think banking's important, and I don't think it's going to ever completely go away. But yeah, you know, I don't know, man. Again, I've started realizing that I can go to alternative sources and make sure that I get 4 to 5% on cash that's sitting there idle. And that sounds a whole lot more appealing than 2%.
Yeah. And again, yeah, it's, you need the banking rails of society. Yeah. I know there's a lot of people out there that are Bitcoin maxis, yeah, and like, oh, I hope the banks die. And it's like, there's such a deeper conversation to this, but yeah, the whole world economy is built on top of all this leverage and loans and all that stuff. So like, the banking is necessary. It's just, it's all about being like, hey, just be like a little less greedy, share some of the yields, share some of the percentages, like give back to the people that help build this great nation, this great world. Again, we could talk about it for hours, but it's important to know. And if you're somebody, you know, I feel like, to be honest, if you're listening to this podcast or with us on the YouTube, like, you're financially educated more than most because you're taking time to tune into us. But man, know where your money's sitting. Know where it is. We talk about, make sure you do your research before investing in anything, crypto, stocks, whatever. But do your research where you sit your cash too, right? Don't miss out on the easy yield, the layups of the financial markets. And there's a lot of awesome options out there right now. And as stable coins become more prevalent, hopefully that only gets better. But what an episode, 55 minutes in, we're coming up on the hour. Something fun, just an absolute gem of a topic that's taken over the internet over the last 10 days has been the Cracker Barrel logo. You know, I'm an East Coast, you know, traveling the country type of guy. I fancy a good Cracker Barrel. I love the country store, the Mercantile. You can get some Yankee candles, you get some flapjacks and some bacon. And I'm a big Cracker Barrel fan. They changed the logo. Everybody was up in arms. Even the president weighed in, where he just kind of, you know, made sure that, you know, Cracker Barrel knew, like, hey, change this logo back. And they did. So, you know, if you were on the side of wanting the original logo back, congratulations, everybody. We did it. Good work. An absolute just hilarious case study of brand management and marketing. But yeah, somebody on our X was just like, you know, put it on the chart. Right. We're going to go higher. This is a catalyst. So what do you think the Cracker Barrel logo can do for us in the crypto markets, Brennan?
Yeah, I mean, if you scroll down right there, it's from TM. It's the comment right under the picture. And he tweeted at us saying, like, guys, throw the logo on the chart. We need to rip from here. And we're like, hey, you ask us, we're going to deliver. So we're deeming this the Cracker Barrel call. And I'm going to share my screen here, and we just got to go over this. I mean, it's the Cracker. I think this happened on Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. What we've started to see here, and let's throw this up on the chart. Again, I've plotted it. We have the Cracker Barrel call. This happened. What does it do? It rips up 17, almost 18% to the upside. Coming back in a little bit here. But the Cracker Barrel call caused Cracker Barrel to rally almost 18% to the upside. And we saw it nosedive here off the lows. So what does this mean for Bitcoin and Ethereum? Well, I'm not saying there's a this is like correlated. But maybe it's not a coincidence here, TiVo. When did Bitcoin bottom? Bitcoin bottomed on Tuesday for the Cracker Barrel call. When did Ethereum bottom? It bottomed on Tuesday for the Cracker Barrel call. What about Solana? Solana bottomed, and Solana is up, you know, 16% since the Cracker Barrel call. So I'm just saying, maybe there's some correlation here. Cracker Barrel gets their old logo back. The Cracker Barrel call goes into full effect. Solana's breaking out to new highs. Bitcoin and Ethereum have bottomed. There might be some alpha here and some sort of correlation between Cracker Barrel, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana in the crypto market. I don't know. Like, listen, we have it plotted now, so we can always go back to Cracker Barrel. We know when it happened, and we know what's going to happen moving forward. So shout out to our gent on X who pointed this out to us because I think he's onto something.
That's hilarious. Ryan just said, is it a stronger signal than the crypto bagel? I don't know. I don't know about that, Ryan.
That might be heresy.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. But it's all in the same direction. It's for the love of food to give us the fuel to go higher. Brendan, I think I'm rubbing off on you. That was a great segment that you put together, and I absolutely loved it. That's what we do here, guys. We have a ton of fun, and we also try to educate you and give you all the crypto markets. Absolutely rocking chat today. If you guys haven't yet, please give the video a like. It really helps us grow. Bottom right, hit the logo, subscribe. And then let's do a couple questions. We had two. One was, I can't remember the exact name, but I remember the question. She was just like, do we want to dive in on ETH right now, or is it too high? Do we want to wait? Again, we can't give you like personal financial advice for your situation. You need to do your own research and decide what's best for you. But you know, if you're not exposed and you want to, you want to dip your toes in a little bit. It's never bad. I think kind of our educational process that's not personal financial advice, obviously, is, you know, you don't want to ever go on anything all in at once, right? You want to do your research, figure out what plan that you want to make for your trade. And then as Bryce has taught us, you plan your trade and you trade your plan. So if you're not exposed, you might want to think about how to get exposed, but definitely, you know, take your time and do your research. Brendan, I think you'd agree with that, right?
I would agree.
Love it. A little bit more, Mrs. Seeley, she's with us all the time. So let's give her some time here. She's a book reader. She said she got started on the book. Community member, longtime subscriber and listener to the pod. She actually has a pretty interesting question here. The issue of how the sex will get, the CEX will get super busy and clogged up during the bull run mania. Is it just best to swap into USDC and hang out until activity mellows and then get your money out if you need it? Any tips for Mrs. C. Lee as a Crypt Nation member as well, who, you know, when things get a little crazy and those gas fees and shit starts to start flying, what do you think?
So usually when centralized exchanges, which is what they're referring to as a SEX, CEX, usually when those start getting clogged up, like Coinbase and stuff, you will see an increase in network activity on a lot of those other blockchains. So if you're trying to transact on Ethereum during a moment like that, Ethereum's network fees are going to go up as well. And that can be pretty expensive. So I don't know if it's necessarily worth it to leave the centralized exchanges to only transact on decentralized exchanges in periods of high activity, because those are the periods where you're going to be getting charged the most on decentralized exchanges, specifically on Ethereum, right? If you do it on most other blockchains, fees are going to be pretty low. You know, outside of like Bitcoin and Ethereum, they're going to be pretty low pretty fast. On most Ethereum layer twos, on most other layer ones like Solana, it's going to still be really, really cheap. So you're not going to have as much of an issue there. But in periods of high network activity, typically fees do go up. So that's something to consider. Most of the time, I think exchanges are fine. Now, if you really want an order to get through and you can't get it through on a centralized exchange, then I think you can look at a decentralized exchange as an option. Just again, be wary of the fees, specifically with probably Bitcoin or Ethereum, mainly Ethereum.
Great stuff, man. That's gonna That's going to wrap us home. You answer the last question. I'll take us home. Guys, yeah. We appreciate everybody who tuned in today. Again, if you haven't, on your way out, please like the video, subscribe. I'm going to be back tomorrow with Brian. That's going to be at 2 p.m. Eastern. So we'll do a little meme coin mania for everybody on the pod network. You're going to get that as well, probably Saturday. But if you want to join us live, it'll be Friday at 2 p.m. Brendan, we appreciate all the knowledge you bring each and every week. I know we have Labor Day Monday, everybody, so we're not going to be here Monday. We'll definitely, depending on how crazy the markets are, maybe we squeeze in two. We'll definitely do one. But, you know, we just really appreciate everybody who's been listening and growing, and we thank you guys for listening. And tune in next week, or tune in tomorrow for me and Brian, and then we'll see Brendan again next week. Thanks, everybody, and have a great rest of your day.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.